good to be here this morning. I hope that you feel the same. We're very blessed in our lives, and it's good to be able to have an opportunity to come and give God thanks for that. I'm going to admit to you that this lesson this morning is going to step on my toes, and so I hope that it steps on yours as well. We talked fairly recently about what faith is, and I came across a lesson Brother Nick Wichard did, and I want to share with you that lesson. There's going to be hopefully two parts to this lesson. The first is talking about times when Jesus talked about a person's faith and where he talked about them having little faith. And what we're going to try to look at is go through the scriptures where the Lord talks about those things and see what is he describing, what is he emphasizing there, what can we learn from those things about what Jesus looked at as being little faith. It's kind of interesting that Matthew, for the most part, is the account where those are mentioned. There's one that I could find in Luke, but most of them were in Matthew. And so we're just going to go through those things and see what we can learn. And like I said, there are some things that I'm going to mention here that just really step on me. We're going to talk about something this morning that I had an issue with this morning. And so please don't take any of this stuff as being that I'm immune to these things. This very much is something that I think we all can learn from. So if you will open up to Matthew chapter 6. And we're going to read verses 25 through 30. Well, actually, that was just the reading, so we're not going to read it again. But I want to go through what the Lord talks about here. He talks there about being worried or anxious about in your life as to what you're going to eat, what you're going to drink, you know, what you're going to put on your body, your clothing. We usually talk about the basics of life. What are the basic things, the things that you have to have is food and clothing. The Lord's saying here, don't worry about those things. Why are you worried about those things? Some of the other translations I thought were kind of neat how they word some of these things. Don't be anxious about those things. Give no thought to it. Interesting way to think about not worrying about these things. Well, what he says there is your Father knows that you need these things. And the point is that he's going to care for you. He compares the birds, the sky, God taking care of them, the flowers, the lilies of the field, that God clothes them in such splendor. God takes care of his creation. He's going to take care of you. And what he says there in verse 30 is, you know, why are you worried about these things? You of little faith. And so there's where he mentions that kind of assessment of you worry about these things, you've got this little faith. And to me, I think that's kind of interesting to think about worry being associated with having little faith. I think so many of us have a struggle with worrying. That's what I was saying I had problems with this morning. There was something that I had forgotten to do, and I started worrying about it. And I started laughing because it's like, you know, here I'm going to preach this morning about don't worry, and I'm worrying about it. It's easy to say don't worry, but it's a natural response to stress or the uncertainty of life for us to worry about what's going to happen, what am I going to do, how am I going to take care of this. Well, the Lord's saying don't worry. When we worry about things, it reflects a little faith, a littleness of faith. And so we know that our Father will take care of us. He is going to watch over us. And so that is, number one, the start of where he talks about having a little faith being indicated by worry. In Matthew chapter 8 is the next account. There's verse 23 through 27. When he got into the boat, his disciples followed him, and behold, there arose a great storm on the sea, so that the boat was being covered with the waves. But Jesus himself was asleep. And they came to him and woke him, saying, "Save us, Lord, we are perishing." And he said to them, "Why are you afraid, you men of little faith?" Then he got up, rebuked the winds and the sea, and it became perfectly calm. The men were amazed and said, "What kind of a man is this that even the winds and the sea obey him?" I think this is such a neat account. You get them, get into the boat, and there's this powerful storm that arises. The waves are coming in. They're spilling over, and it's just a turbulent storm. And they go and they wake up Jesus. Well, Jesus is asleep in the storm. I think Patty and I have talked about this not too long ago. It seems like it wasn't too long ago. How can this man be asleep and this boat is just being tossed around in this storm? My guess is, and this is just my opinion, that this reflects how dead tired Jesus was at times. When you look at accounts like in Mark chapter 6, the disciples come back from being sent out in the limited commission, and they're reporting Jesus about the wonderful things that were being done and being accomplished. And Jesus says, "Let's go off to this place so that we can rest." And Mark tells us there that they were not even able to eat a meal. They were so overwhelmed. People coming all the time wanting something. "Lord, do this. Lord, help me. Lord." They couldn't even eat a meal because they were overwhelmed. And so he says, "Let's go off to this place where we can rest." They get in the boat in that occasion and they go across the sea. And the people see them leaving. And what do? They run along the shoreline and beat him to the other side. Jesus shows up in the boat and there's this crowd of people. He's trying to get away to rest and there's a crowd of people. How would you respond to that? My natural inclination would be, "Can't you folks leave me alone for 1 minute? I'm just needing a little time to myself." And Mark tells us in chapter 6 that Jesus sees them and he has compassion on them because they were like sheep without a shepherd. Jesus was very selfless, was very giving and very serving. And here he's in this boat, and again, I just picture him as being dead tired and he passes out asleep. The storm comes up and it's danger. The disciples are hitting the panic button and they wake him up and say, "Lord, save us. We're dying. Save us." They cry out to him. And his response is, "Why are you afraid?" These were not, at least some of his disciples were not men who were intimidated by water or being around water. These were, some men were the fishermen. They had been out in the sea. They knew the conditions of the sea. They weren't trepid about being around water. The danger was real here. And yet, Jesus talks about, "Why are you afraid?" And he says, "You are of little faith." And so here you've got an example of being afraid, of the fear being associated with having little faith. What do we have to fear? If we're with the Master, if the Lord is watching over us, what do we have to fear? And so fear can indicate a smallness of faith on our part. Before we get to this next passage, I want to kind of walk up so we don't have to read the whole text. But we've got where that Jesus goes to the mountain to pray by himself. They've sent the multitudes away. He goes to the mountain to pray by himself. And he tells the disciples to go on ahead of him. And so he has them get into the boat and start to head across the sea without him. And we're told that he looks out in the middle of the night, basically. He looks out and he can see them on the sea, still rowing to get across, and they're struggling. Because there is a strong wind that is basically against them. And so they're struggling there to get across the sea. It is what the text tells us in the fourth watch of the night. If you're like me, I don't know some of those things. I have to trust that, you know, some little side note tells me it's 3 to 6 a.m. Well, first thing in my mind is like, how long have these poor disciples been out there rowing and struggling? and they are just struggling to get across that wind that is pushing against them. And so, in the middle of the night, 3 to 6 a.m., what do they see as this, you know, stormy kind of wind is blowing? They look up and they see Jesus walking on the water. There He is, walking on the surface of the water. Now, what's your first response going to be? Hey, Lord, how's it going? You know, they think they're seeing a ghost. You talk about a creepy scene. Laura and I sometimes laugh, you know, going late out at night to do something out in the yard, and, you know, there's a mist, you know, out on the hill, and you just kind of get the willies because, you know, we watch enough movies that you see these creepy kind of scenes. I picture this as a creepy kind of scene. They're in the middle of the night, the storm, they're tired from rowing all the time, and they look up and they see Jesus on the water. They cry out. Have you ever thought about what kind of cry that was? I don't picture them as saying, "Hey, fellas, look, there's a ghost." In my mind, I picture them screaming. I mean, they're crying out. This is fear. And so, as we have that scene, Jesus comforts them and assures them that it is Him. And Peter says, "Well, Lord, if it's You, command me to come out to You." Or says, "Come." That is neat. It is neat that Peter goes out to Him. In Matthew chapter 14, Peter gets out of the boat. And I don't know if you've pictured that, but just the imagery of you're in a boat and stepping out into the water is remarkable. That Peter had that kind of faith to step out of the boat to go to Jesus when He commanded, say, "Come." And so as he gets out, in Matthew chapter 14, verse 30, "Peter, seeing the wind, he became frightened, and beginning to sink, he cried out, 'Lord, save me!' Immediately Jesus stretched out His hand and took hold of him and said to him, 'You of little faith, why did you doubt?'" Again, I think that it's worth giving, you know, the acknowledgement that Peter had the faith to initially step out. I think that's a lot just right there. But he began to sink when he became fearful. And he became fearful for, I think, good reasons. The winds are whipping these waves around. He sees the wind. It says he sees the wind. I think he's seeing the wind moving those waves. And he becomes fearful and starts to sink. Now, I've heard it pointed out that the problem started when he took his eyes off of Jesus. He starts looking at these things around him instead of focusing on where he needs to go. The Master's right there. He's beckoning them to come. But he starts looking at these other things and gets frightened. And so beginning to sink, the Lord takes hold of him and he's right immediately right there and pulls him up. And so Jesus tells them, "Why'd you doubt? You have little faith." And so again, you've got these pictures of worry, of fear, of doubt, being indicative of what Jesus is describing as little faith. Brethren, again, you think about Peter in that situation, I think it's understandable that he was fearful about those conditions. But it demonstrated a lack of faith. He needed to have more strength and more confidence in the Lord that nothing was going to happen to him because the Lord had commanded him to come and the Lord's there. Nothing was going to happen to him. So why doubt? The next passage, Matthew chapter 16, verse 5 through 11. Matthew 16, verse 5 through 11. "And the disciples came to the other side of the sea, but they had forgotten to bring any bread. And Jesus said to them, 'Watch out and beware of the leaven of the Pharisees and Sadducees.' They began to discuss this among themselves, saying, 'He said that because we did not bring any bread.' But Jesus, aware of this, said, 'You men of little faith, why do you discuss among yourselves that you have no bread? Do you not yet understand or remember the 5 loaves of the 5,000 and how many baskets full you picked up? Or the 7 loaves of the 4,000 and how many large baskets full you picked up? How is it that you do not understand that I did not speak to you concerning bread, but beware of the leaven of the Pharisees and Sadducees? Then they understood that he did not say to beware of the leaven of bread, but of the teaching of the Pharisees and Sadducees. So as they're traveling, they've left. How do you leave no bread? You know, you're going on a trip and nobody packs any food. It's like, wasn't my job, it was, you know, Andrew's job. No, Andrew said, it wasn't my job, it was John's job. Nobody packed bread. And so Jesus says this thing about the leaven of the Pharisees and the Sadducees, and the text tells us he was talking about their teaching. Beware of their teaching, of their influence. But when they hear leaven, they think bread. And so they start saying, he's telling us this because we didn't bring any bread. Well, you have to keep in mind, as the text talks about, the Lord mentions the 5,000 and the 4,000. They have seen the Lord take this small amount of bread and feed a multitude of people. They didn't just see it once, they saw it twice. And so when Jesus mentions that, he says, don't you understand or remember these things? Clearly, Jesus is not worried about bread. If he needs bread, he can make bread. So when he's saying this to them, it's not because he's somehow concerned about bread. Well, I think it's kind of neat to think about that Jesus, in his statement, is saying that they should have known this. They should have been able to understand this, to be able to come to the right kind of conclusion. And so I think that's kind of where that's the connection to him talking about their little faith, that they did not understand, they didn't remember. They should have been able to put two and two together. They've seen what he's able to do. He's not worried about bread. Have some faith. And so I think there is this expectation on Jesus' part that they would be able to understand or come to the right kind of conclusion about what he told them. And so I think he's rebuking them about, why did you not get this? How did you not get this? I think there's a sting to this. I can imagine my kind of letdown if I'm sitting there with a master and I've been trying to follow him and he says, don't you understand? Don't you remember? You've got little faith. I would be hurt by that. But it was true that they should have been able to understand this. And so I think sometimes our lack of faith can make us or bring us to come to the wrong kind of conclusions. That we should have understood or we should have remembered, but we didn't. And so we come to the wrong conclusions. There are sometimes, like the disciples here, that they should have come to some kind of understanding, some kind of point, but they have not grown like they should have. And so there's the possibility that sometimes people don't grow like they should. I still think that, to me, it's like, not just don't you understand, but remember. Why didn't you remember what the Lord has done, what He has been able to do? And that should help us to, again, have this kind of course in our actions and in our thinking to remember and have a greater faith. So what does the Lord expect from us? There are some times where that you can find people that you explain principles taught in God's Word and they don't understand it. And I'm not talking about a situation where that they don't have the ability to comprehend. They've got the mental facility to be able to understand what you're saying, but for some reason they don't grasp the principle. Why? You can go back and you can explain again and they still don't get it. Why? I think sometimes it's perhaps people are too focused on the world. It's because they let the influence of the world sway or cloud their thinking. It sometimes may be that they don't have the necessary faith to get it. And so again, a lack of faith, I think, sometimes makes people where they don't come to the right kind of conclusions. They're not where they're supposed to be. They ought to be. I think that's kind of an interesting concept to think about. I want us to go back and think about the concept of fear having a reflection of a lack of faith on our part. It's bad enough that our fear impact us. I don't know of too many situations. There's going to be some times where that if you sin, it only affects you. But a lot of times when you have some kind of either deficiency in your faith or you sin, it's going to impact people around you. We don't live in a bubble. We don't live on an island. We have interactions with people. We have influences on other people. And so when we do wrong, we let people down. We give a bad impact on people. They may be encouraged to do something wrong in their life as well because we did something wrong in our life. Those kind of things. When you look at Galatians chapter 2, there's an example of where a person's fear impacted others. Galatians chapter 2 is the account where that Paul tells us about confronting Peter about his sin. And so in Galatians chapter 2, verse 11 through 13, says, "But when Cephas came to Antioch, I opposed him to his face because he stood condemned. For prior to the coming of certain men from James, he used to eat with the Gentiles. But when they came, he began to withdraw and hold himself aloof, fearing the party of the circumcision. The rest of the Jews joined him in hypocrisy, with the result that even Barnabas was carried away by their hypocrisy." So here is Peter. He would eat with the Gentiles, he interact with them, you know, have a fine time being with them. But when these Jews came from James, he feared them and changed course. He started acting like there was somehow some distinction. He couldn't do that anymore. He wasn't treating them the same way as like brethren. There is an example there of because of his fear of them, of what they would say about him, what they would think about him, he allowed that to change his actions and the way that he treated brethren. And so sometimes we have to have the faith to do what is needed, to stand up for what is right, to not let that fear keep us from doing what we ought to do. There is kind of a similar thought, I think, to this in 2 Peter chapter 1, verse 5, where that Peter talks about adding to our faith virtue or moral excellence. What do you think about if you're going to have virtue? It is that you're going to do what is right no matter what the circumstance, no matter what people are thinking, what they're saying. That takes courage to stand up and say, "I'm going to do this because it is what is virtuous, it is what is right, it is what the Lord wants me to do." And so Peter talks about adding to your faith that virtue. Not being driven by fear to all of a sudden change your behavior and say, "Well, it's okay because I don't want this person to say something bad about me." It takes courage to stand up and do what is right. That, I think, is impressive to think about. But again, it is sad to think about people letting their fear impact them and also others. To like in Peter's case, even Barnabas was carried away with this hypocrisy. It bled over and encouraged others to do likewise and to treat the Gentiles poorly there, the brethren that were Gentiles poorly. In a more negative way, Revelation 21, verse 8... Maybe I should say in a more pointed way, this points out the negative nature about fear. Revelation 21, verse 8. "But for the cowardly and unbelieving and abominable and murderers and immoral persons and sorcerers and idolaters and all liars will have their part in the lake that burns with fire and brimstone, which is the second death." New American Standard says, "for the cowardly." Some of the other translations just say, "for the fearful." That's that concept. It is somebody who is fearful, who is cowardly. They don't stand for what is right. They are cowardly. Well, you look at that passage, and it lists that with other things like murderers and liars and idolaters. They're going to have their part in the lake of fire. So this is a huge thing for us to be able to you know, wrestle with and to conquer and overcome is our fear. I don't know if this is a good example or not. But for some reason, as I was doing this lesson, I was thinking about door knocking. Brethren, I know that there is a lot of folks that don't think that door knocking is very useful because they're not seeing success from it. I understand some of that. I understand some people say it's just not my thing to do. But in my mind, I have wondered at times if there are some of those efforts that are not embraced more because of fear. I mean, you don't know what the person is going to do at that door. You don't know what they're going to say, how they're going to react. And you're knocking on the door and you're waiting to see what's going to happen. It's been a while since I've gone door knocking. But I can remember every time that I've gone out door knocking, there's been some intrepidation. You know, you got a feeling inside. You don't know what's going to happen. It takes a pretty good little kick to get going each time. It's not like, well, I've done it for a year now and I've got it mastered. Every time you step out to go and knock on somebody's door, there's going to be a sense of fear there that has to be overcome. Every time you talk to somebody that you don't know how they're going to respond, there is a sense of fear about, is this going to blow up? Is this going to be well received? Are they going to ask some kind of crazy question? What's going to happen here? We have to be able to master our fear. It's not because we got to prove ourselves to ourselves. It's because we want to do what the Lord wants us to do. And we're going to have the faith to say, the Lord's going to be with me and it's going to be all right. I want to serve the Lord. So what do you do if worry is a big thing for you? I mean, how do you deal with it? You know, it's one thing just to say, okay, worry indicates little faith. Okay, now we move on. Lesson's done. What do you do when you worry? How do you handle that? Let me suggest to you that Philippians 4 may have at least something for us to consider. Philippians 4 is one of those passages that, again, I think I've heard so much growing up that sometimes I take it for granted. I don't let it really permeate my mind as much as I should. Philippians 4, 4 through 7. Rejoice in the Lord always. And again, I will say rejoice. Let your gentle spirit be known to all men. The Lord is near. Be anxious for nothing, but in everything by prayer and supplication, with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God. And the peace of God, which surpasses all comprehension, will guard your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus. Brethren, I think that perhaps how we deal with worry is that we rejoice in the Lord. That we find those blessings that we have, that we think about how much the Lord's done for us, how good He's been to us, and we rejoice in those things. If you're rejoicing in what good God has done for you, I think it's going to help you not to worry so much. Now, there is a difference. We've talked about this. It seems like not too long ago, Gary Kerr came and did a lesson where he was talking about Philippians and the joy that we see in what Paul talks about there. And we mentioned there around that time that there's a difference between joy and happiness. That joy is something that's lasting, whereas happiness is temporary. It is something that's just based on the circumstances. And so if at this point in time somebody gives me something, I'm happy. But then if I stub my toe as I'm walking along, I'm not happy, I'm sad. And so happiness is one of those things that kind of comes and goes depending on what's happening. But joy, and especially joy in the Lord, remains. It is not something that should ebb and flow. It should be that we have the ability to rejoice in the Lord always. I think, again, we talked about last week that we are blessed in the Lord, that we count our blessings, that we feel that we are blessed. Rejoicing always. And then as he talks about in verse 5 there, that we, verse 6, be anxious for nothing, but in everything by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God. I feel kind of silly in a way. Sometimes word studies are really beneficial to me because, he says, in verse 6 there, be anxious for nothing. Well, I may be dim-witted, but anxious and worry, well, they're the same thing. Well, I don't always click in my mind. If you're anxious about something, if you're worrying about something, take it to God in prayer. You lay it before your Father, and the peace of God will guard your hearts. And so we pray to God about those things. We ask God to help us. We give our pleading and our petitions, our supplications for help. We take those things to God. Now, I want to encourage you to be a kind of person who will be satisfied with whatever the answer is from God. I know a lot of times I have in my mind, I want a certain outcome of the situation. I want a certain answer. Well, if God doesn't answer the prayer the way you want it to be, are you going to be upset? Or are you going to trust that God knows what is best, that you are putting it in His hands, you're entrusting your soul to a faithful Creator who will take care of it and will take care of you? Brethren, again, as we do that, there's going to be that peace of God that He gives us, that will guard us and will help us because we know that He will take care of it, that He cares for us like Matthew 6 talked about. We know that this life will end, that all the things that this life has will pass away, so don't worry about it. Don't be consumed with fear and doubt and things like that. Paul encourages us in Colossians 3:2 to set our mind on things above. I thought it was kind of interesting that some of the translations say, set your affections on things above. I think that's King James, maybe. Well, where's your affection at? What do you long for? Set your affection on things above, not on things below. May God help us to grow in our faith. I told you that, to me I felt like this stuff stepped on my toes because I am a worrier. And the thing about Jesus looking at my life and saying, why are you afraid? Where's your faith? I mean, after all this time, don't you understand? Don't you remember the things that He's able to do? Why are you worried about these things? May God help us to grow in our faith, to be able to trust Him more each day.